Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today at Your Family Dog. I'm Colleen Pilar, and I'm here with Julie Fudge-Smith, and we're here to talk about dogs. Hi, Julie. How are you doing?
I'm good, Colleen. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Today, we are thinking about that exciting topic that all dogs love, the sound of the doorbell or the person knocking at the door. And you were just telling me about a client that you'd been working with recently who is particularly excited about that. Can you share that story with us?
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah, this was a couple, Trevor and Lucy, and they have a little dog named Trapper. And Trapper loves people. But the problem is when somebody knocks on the door, he gets so excited that he runs over, he urinates, and then he's so revved up, he jumps and he urinates and he barks and barks and barks, 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 barks.
So that sounds pretty unappealing.
Yes, especially that high-pitched bark, 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 bark.
I don't know. I was thinking maybe the wet shoes from a dog urinating right near me is equally distressing.
I think that they were so used to the urination that the barking just, you know, would be so sharp. So what they decided to try was they actually put up a baby gate across their kitchen doorway so that Trapper could see the front door but couldn't get to the people.
That's a great idea. I use that with a lot of clients.
Yeah, I have too, and I thought that was a great idea. It wasn't in the case of Trapper, because as we discussed the problem, what we really came to understand was the gate was exacerbating the issue for Trapper, because he was so excited to see the people. When he couldn't actually get to them, he'd rev up and rev up and rev up. And so by the time they would get the person in and open the gate, he was so excited, it took him much longer to calm down.
So that's a frustrating part about solutions, isn't it? Where you kind of go like, well, it depends. This works well for 99% of dogs, not so much for Trapper. So you have to look at every single one as an individual case.
Oh, absolutely. So I was sitting there going, okay, my one really great solution's not working. What do we do? So we talked about it and we realized that one of the things that does calm him down was actually meeting people. So what we needed to do was, how do we find a way for him to successfully meet people without going over the top and urinating and barking like crazy? So we decided that in the front hall, there was a rug, and he likes that rug. So we started practicing stays on the rug. So we would put him in a stay, and she would walk, the wife, Lucy, would walk to the door, jiggle the handle, and come back. And then we would have her walk to different parts of the room and while she practiced the stay. Then we had Trevor go outside and knock on the door while we practiced the stay on the rug. And then what we found is that the knock on the door, he would stay on the rug for a little bit, but then he could walk over to the door with Lucy. And as long as he had free rein to walk to the door, say hi to the person, and then run back and get his treats, he didn't urinate and he didn't bark nearly so much. So our solution has been to really reward him well for being on the rug. And when I was there this morning, I knocked on the door and I heard the bark, 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 but it wasn't the rawr, rawr, rawr. It was bark, 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 just a little bark. Okay, we dog trainers do a lot of barking.
We do.
It's just, it's an annoying little habit we have. But when I walked through the door, he was on his rug. He came over to the threshold, looked at me, thought, I need to say hi to the treat lady. But I had treats on my rug. So he ran back and got a treat, and I was able to step in the door. He came over and said hi, and then we moved over to the rug, and he got some more treats on the rug. So it's not a complete solution, but we're really working towards training him that the sound of someone knocking means I run to my rug because good things happen to me there.
Yeah, which is a great use of like a go-to-place behavior, going
Absolutely.
To the mat. He can always tell toe-wise, are my toes on tile or wood, or are they on the rug? And the rug is good, not rug is bad. Not bad per se, but incorrect.
Right. So right. Non-rewarding.
It's non-rewarding space to be, yes. And that's a really good solution for that. So in this case, we have a dog who's just so excited to see the people. And a lot of dogs really are. And one of the particular challenges is we don't always know when our doorbell's going to ring or if someone's going to knock on the door, and dogs get all revved up and rush to the door. And people are looking for a management solution in this tumultuous moment. So the baby gate does work really well for a lot of people. And for some people, having a tether or something nearby the door where you can just sort of tether the dog to your banister so that the dog is not jumping on the guest, or, you know, the FedEx guy. I mean, I always think it's so funny when people think, I can't actually open my screen door to, you know, sign for a package because my dog is going to dart out because the dog is so excited and aroused.
Right.
So what you had I'm so sorry. I've forgotten Trapper's male owner's name. Is it
Trevor?
Trevor? Okay. So you had Trevor step outside and practice ringing the doorbell so that Trapper could have a chance to practice when Lucy was ready to work with him.
Right. And then
she wasn't just waiting for random.
Right. And then we had Lucy inside, or Lucy go out and knock on the door so Trevor could practice, because I also wanted him to practice when the other one wasn't there. What do I do if there's only one person? And then we had them practice where I went out and knocked on the door so they could do a two-person solution, so that one of them could stay right at the rug. And what we talked about today was fine dining, so that when the doorbell rang, Trevor would go over, he had a handful of treats, and he'd talk to Trapper, and he'd pet him, and he'd treat him, and we'd play a little bit on the rug, and so that we really began to reinforce the rug in a lot of different ways. Not only was there food there, but there was my person there, and we were playing, and we were talking, and I was getting my belly rubbed, and all kinds of wonderful things happened on the rug, because I want everything wonderful to happen on that rug. And then it made it a lot easier for Lucy to be able to open the door when somebody else was there working with the dog. But I wanted to be able to work with it both ways.
I was just going to mention one other thing
about tethers is that I love tethers too. And I, in fact, had a tether on my front banister for probably 7 years because I just never knew how exciting we were going to be or whatever was going to happen. So I would leave the tether there. And after a while, I didn't have to use it, but it was still there in case I needed it. And the best thing about that was it allowed me to also reinforce the dog for doing something good, which was being away from the door. So we would get put on the tether, and then we'd get a little dump of treats right in front of us. So we had something to do rather than bark at whoever was at the door.
Yeah, and that's such an important piece. What do you want your dog to do versus what do you not want your dog to do? So you're setting up the success. One thing I was thinking about when you were talking about the knocking on the door is I have used text messaging for this with a couple of my clients where one will text the other, you know, like almost home from work, so that they can then come and ring their own doorbell or knock on their own door. But the spouse who's home is ready. Now I know this is going to happen. Or, you know, have a neighbor say, you know, sometime in the next 15 minutes, can you come by? But give me a heads up. And the dog doesn't associate your phone going bloop with anything exciting. But when you hear the doorbell, you're all set. So the reason dogs think doorbells are exciting is we get up and move. So they just join us in that activity. Our cell phones, we just lift them up and go, huh? Typically, dogs don't care that much about
that. No, they don't. Cell phones do not deliver treats.
Yeah.
But so, the other thing is they were having work done on their house. So we actually employed all of the workers going in and out of the house to join us in this training session as well, so that we could practice it with other people than who Trapper was used to seeing.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
And that's a really good solution for a dog who really likes people.
Absolutely.
So if you have a dog who's a little less comfortable with strangers, meaning the dog loves its family but doesn't always love strangers, you don't have to have your dog at the door. I mean, every now and then I'll have a client sort of confess to me. They're like, oh, well, when my doorbell rings, I just put my dog in the bathroom to open the door. And they say it like they should be ashamed. And I'm like, is your dog okay? Yeah, your dog is fine. You open the door, you handle the problem, or, you know, you sign for your package, or you invite your guest in, and then you bring your dog back out. Or it's a simple solution. But if we're looking at what makes your dog most comfortable, if your dog isn't all that comfortable with people, they don't need to be right there at the door. And so management strategies can really come into play there.
I agree. And one of the things that I also like to do is if I know when somebody's coming, oftentimes what I would do is put my dogs in the backyard, get everybody in, get them settled, then bring the dogs in. Because part of what I think is would get my dogs riled up was just the whole excitement of somebody coming through the door.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so if
it's exciting.
So if I had everybody in and seated and the dogs came in, they were much better at just visiting, not jumping, not barking, not being, you know, it's like, oh, they're here. Oh, my goodness, the sofa's changed. There's a person on it. But it's not the excitement of somebody coming in and the coats coming off and the bags falling and all that other stuff. So I used to say to my clients is, my dog does not need to meet everybody who comes to my house.
Mm-hmm.
And two, he doesn't necessarily have to meet them right away. If we're going to meet them, we can do it when it's convenient for me and for him.
Right. Right. And so having a strategy for that can help lower the arousal level all the way across the board.
Absolutely.
It's a really important piece of it, because the dog in this moment of being all hyped up, oh my goodness, someone's at the door, isn't making their best decisions. So let's prevent that. Let's find other strategies for dealing with that. And I think it's really freeing to know that you can do that.
Yes.
It's interesting how many people don't realize your dog doesn't have to go to the door.
Yeah, that is, it's fine if you have a gate. The other thing is if you're going to have a baby gate up on sort of a semi-permanent basis,
mm-hmm.
you might want to invest in the kind of baby gate that actually has a gate in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that you are not always trying to unlatch the gate and pick it up or step over it. I mm-hmm. found I had one of those on my office here that had the swinging gate inside the gate, and that was really handy. And I would use it oftentimes when, like if my grandchildren were visiting and my dogs needed a break, I could put the gate up, and it was a wonderful way for the kids to see the dogs, but it was a really clear indication to them, the dogs are behind the gate, you don't go through the gate. But then I didn't have to be putting the gate up and down all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or when my dogs had surgery or something, I could put them in a small room, gate them in there, and they didn't necessarily have to be crated at that point. So if you're going to use gates a lot, think about the kind of the swinging gate. They're not that expensive, and I think you can get them at Walmart, which is where I got mine.
Yeah, you can get them all over the place. But that point plays in with the leash that you said, too, lived for 7 years on a banister. If you're going to use a management solution, it needs to be easily available and pretty much just a part of the context. If you have to go, oh, someone's at the door. Where's the baby gate? Where's the leash? What am I going to get now?
It's not going to work.
So you need to have a plan in place that you use often enough that the dog is comfortable with. You know, like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Then the dog is fine and you're fine too.
One of the other things I was going to say that Trevor, Lucy, I came up with, and this is something that I do, is in their front hall, they have a wardrobe, and it's not so tall that you can't reach the top of it. And I said, you know, do you have a cute pot? And they said, yeah. And I said, why don't you put that up there filled with dog treats? That's mm-hmm. what I do. If you know where to look in my house, there is a canister of dog treats in every room in the house, so they have immediately available any treat that I may need.
Yeah.
And I've got a big black pot right by my front door that is chock full of dog treats.
Yeah.
So that I have that. So I can also do another thing that I found is effective is what I call find it. What I would do with my dogs is if we were all rushing the door, I'd get a handful of treats and go, oh, looky, everybody, find it. And I would throw a fistful of treats into another room, into the living room or mm-hmm. into the dining room, so that we cannot simultaneously be running after a whole bunch of treats that mom has thrown and molest the person at the door.
Yeah, I joke with people that I'm not really got a good eye for interior design, and yet I walk into their house and make suggestions. Like, wouldn't it be great to put a little shelf here where we could put some treats on that one? And people are so great, they do. They're like, oh, an easy access spot for treats or for my leash or whatever the management
Absolutely.
Tool is. You know, the things that make your life easier make your life so much easier that they don't have to be the most beautiful part of your house. They just need to be convenient, accessible, and as attractive as you can make them.
That's right. Which leads me to one other thing that I do, especially with retrievers, is oftentimes retrievers are much calmer at the door if I can hold something.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I will do when I'm working with retriever families is say, get a cute little basket, put it by the front door, and fill it with stuffed toys that he likes. You can even throw a few leashes in there if you need to. But I found that having had two retrievers at one time, the Bernese Mountain Dog had, like, why are you handing me this? But the retrievers, everybody would get something to hold, and then we can do the happy dance and say hi to the people.
Yes.
But I'm not going to get too close because you might take Mr. Fuzzy Man away from me.
That's so funny. That reminds me, when my kids were little, I had a golden retriever. And if someone would come to my house, she'd get so excited and look for one of her toys. But if she didn't see one immediately, she'd run upstairs and find one of my kids' sleeper pajamas and come running back downstairs with a little kid's pajamas in her mouth. And she, the same thing, where she would just prance around. I have this. I'm so happy you're at my house and I have pajamas. Yes. And that's a retriever thing. And you know what? It's okay to have a retriever thing. You know, that I think with our dogs, we have all these breeds and they have tendencies toward certain behaviors. And then we occasionally want dogs to not behave according to their instincts. And right. It's like, no, play with it, roll with it, you know?
Use the stuffy toys
at your door. Yeah.
My flat-coated retriever, his breeder said, you know, when a dog is holding something, that should be a zen moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really true. If I would give dogs, you know, give Bingley something to hold, you say, oh, I just feel so much better now that I have a tennis ball or three.
Yeah.
So that's another thing I think that's great. Now,
yeah. Actually, in the show notes, we might have to put up that wonderful picture of Bingley with the three tennis balls in his mouth. We'll add that to the show for you.
All right. The other thing that I was also going to say, that alternative uses for some of these solutions is a tether is not necessarily practical when you're out walking, but something that's related to that are two leashes.
Mm-hmm.
So that one of the things you can do with two leashes is that if you are out walking and you want to have your dog behave nicely towards somebody when they stop to say hi to you, you can drop like the crappy leash and step on it so the dog can stand and sit but can't jump, and then hold on to the other leash. So you still have your hand on it, so if the leash slips out from underneath your foot, you still have control over your dog. So
yeah,
I like
that's a great technique. And so many people say, well, I could just step on the leash I'm holding. And I'm like, not if your dog's really bouncing. It's really hard to do the one you're holding. But if you've got a dual leash, you can just drop that second one and step on it. Easy peasy.
Yeah, I think that's a great solution of yours. The other thing that I also like for two leashes is, which is not related to door, but this is one thing that's great for two leashes, is to use it when your kids want to help walk the dog. My grandkids are all less than, well, one's seven, so they're all seven or less, and they really can't manage a big dog on their own. But what they can manage is when we have two leashes. So mm-hmm. when one of them wants to walk the dog, I have them pick out one of my leashes, they clip that on the dog, and I clip my heavy leather leash on, and so we can go walking so that they can take the dog for a walk, but they're not in danger of being pulled down. They're not in danger of actually pulling my dog. So right. It works out really nicely. And one of the things I recommend to people that have several kids who want to walk their dog is take them to Walmart and let each one of them pick out their favorite color leash. And then that's their leash to walk the dog. And mm-hmm. that also makes it easier on a walk, because if everybody knows that Johnny has the green one and Susie has the pink one and Michael has the blue one, whichever leash is on the dog, it's that kid's turn to walk the dog.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. So have we pretty much covered the door stuff, someone knocking at the door? Is there anything that we want to add to this today?
No, I think that we need to remember that in order to come up with a solution to the problem, I think it's both a management and a training problem.
It is. And focusing on what you do want your dog to do.
Right. So, but you need to manage the problem so he doesn't practice it while
right.
you teach that incompatible behavior.
Absolutely.
So I think it can be both. And sometimes the management solution is the solution. There's just not that much to train. That the management of putting my dog behind the gate works really well. Bravo.
Yeah. And that's fantastic. That's, I think that's a real easy piece for a lot of people to miss, you know, that a management solution is ideal. I always tell people relationship management and training are all very, very important, but if you've got fantastic relationship and fantastic management, there's not that much training that we really need to do.
Absolutely.
A lot of stuff that's fun to do, but the stuff you really need to do, if you've got good relationship and good management, we're probably most of the way there.
I agree. And one of the things I was going to say, too, in addition to the management, is make sure you reinforce the behavior that you're managing. So, for example, the dog's behind the gate, that would also be a good time to drop a handful of kibble or treats for him to give him something to do, so that while you're managing him, he's actually enjoying it and learning that it's in my best interest to stay behind this gate.
Yeah. So let me just recap here real quickly and see if I got all our points. So the first thing is to decide, what do I want my dog to do when we hear a doorbell or someone knocking? And then we want to look at, how can I keep the arousal level from going too high? You know, that when we have that sound, it should not be that all chaos breaks loose. We're going to set up some management strategies so that the dog isn't rehearsing behaviors we don't want. Correct. So while we're learning something new, we want to make sure we're preventing something inappropriate. And then we're really, really reinforcing any behavior that fits within our definition of appropriate behavior in response to the doorbell. And of course, any good positive reinforcement trainer can help you with any of these pieces. And as we talked about today, there's not a one right answer. So baby gate's fantastic for most dogs, not so much for Trapper. So if you are finding that you're working with this and it's not working, contact a trainer. Ask, you know, explore the options that will work best for you. Trainers are really happy to be flexible and coming up with different creative plans that fit your household, because the configuration of your house and your family and your dog is different for each of our clients. We're used to that. We're always playing the variables.
Absolutely. And that's why I think it's also important to contact a positive reinforcement trainer.
Absolutely.
Because they are going to be more likely to have creative solutions, because they're looking yes. for a positive way to solve this problem. I right. think traditional people tend, no, this is the way you do it. You teach them to sit and you give them a correction or a jerk. And I think that that doesn't necessarily work all the time. And you need somebody who's willing to be creative in their thinking.
Right. So, and it can create some very negative associations with people coming to your door.
Absolutely.
So every time I hear a doorbell and it means Colleen goes crazy. Oh no, I don't like doorbells because Colleen, you know, does a choke chain correction on me or something. My dog would be really unhappy about that. So doorbell means cookies for me in the kitchen. Yay.
Right. Absolutely. Because we have to be careful when we're doing punishment. What are we actually punishing? What's the dog actually learning? And that is a real key issue for me. And if yeah. I have mistakenly treated you when you moved forward rather than you moved backwards, well, so be it. We can get it better the next time. There's no right. damage being done to my dog.
Right. Relationship.
So important. Absolutely. All right. Well, we have a question. We get emails and we get phone calls. And we have a question this week. Why do dogs scratch the ground after they've gone to the bathroom? Would you like to answer that one, Colleen?
Well, I think that's always an interesting one to watch, because not all dogs do it.
No.
But when dogs do it, they have scent glands in their paws. Dogs, that's where they sweat. And so in their paws, they have these scent-producing glands. And when they kick up grass or dirt or mulch or anything, it spreads their scent around. So they're basically saying, hey, I was here. It's like the old Kilroy was here signs. Yeah. So it's just sort of a marking of a moment. I was here. I've left my little graffiti mark. But it's also, I think, really fun. Yes. You know, for the dogs who like it, they really like it. You used to have a dog who was particularly fond of making
we
a
did.
Mess.
His name was Rebel, and we got him in a Confederate. He was abandoned in a Confederate trench on the Chancellorsville battlefield, and we brought him home. And since he was in the Confederate trench, we named him Rebel. Anyway, he had paws that were about the size of satellite dishes.
They were big feet for a littlest dog. He was medium sized dog with big feet.
He like pie pans. And he would dig like a steam shovel. When he would go to the bathroom, and if like he would urinate on a tree that was surrounded by mulch, the mulch would go flying. It was like scattershot from a shotgun. It was everywhere. Now, if there wasn't mulch around the tree, he wouldn't do that. And every time he defecated, which was usually on mulch or on lawn, it would go 6 feet in the air. And he just loved it. He was so bouncy and excited afterwards. So it was the fact that he would do it only on trees that were surrounded by something he could kick up made me begin to think that he was actually really enjoying this, that this was perhaps started as an instinctive behavior, but he learned how much fun it was, which mm-hmm. goes to show that every behavior has certain components that I think are really important to understand. There's the genetic component. I think dogs are driven to do this, to do their scent. There's mm-hmm. the learned behavior component, like, wow, this is really fun. I like doing this. It gives me a good feeling. And there's also the environmental component. He wouldn't do it of trees that weren't surrounded by mulch.
Right.
So there was an environmental trigger. But it was fun to watch him. And I every time I see a dog who does that, I have to smile and think of my Rebel, who used to do that all the time. So I think, Colleen, that wraps it up for this week.
That does.
I think that we hope, Colleen and I both hope, that you feel that we, that the way that we do, that life is just better with a dog. Wouldn't you agree?
Life is better with a dog. It is.
All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye, Colleen.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend about it. We'd love to reach people who feel as we do, that life is better with a dog.